Penguin Random House Audio presents Walk the Vanished Earth by Aaron Swan. Read for you by Saskia Marleveld, Dylan Moore, and Keeler Lee. This book is for Pete. So much for us. So much for the flags we bored into planets dry as chalk, for the tin cans we filled with fire and rode like cowboys into all we tried to tame. Listen, the dark we've only ever imagined now audible, thrumming, marbled with static like grisly meat. A chorus of engines churns. Silence taunts. A dare. Everything that disappears, disappears as if returning somewhere. Tracy K. Smith, The Universe, Original Motion Picture Soundtrack. Good weather never lasts forever on this earth. Laura Ingalls Wilder, Little House on the Prairie. Samson, Kansas Prairie, 1873. Wind through the curly buffalo grass, hot sun on his hat, a faint irritation of flies. He surveys the plain, humped with woolly beasts. He has shot 12 today, 2 bulls, 9 cows, 1 calf. A respectable haul, though not his best. Burros and masters have already bent to work, sawing off tongues, stripping hides. Soon he will join them. The afternoon stinks of dropped dung and blood and his own sweat. He mops his face with his handkerchief, wonders when his beard will grow. He would like to shave with the others, squatting by the chipped mirror at dawn, his breath fogging the glass. He considers the cow closest to his feet, ponders her final moments. Neither Masters nor Burroughs believes in animal sentience, but he imagines their minds as small campfires within their matted heads. They would crackle and glow, cast off sparks. Riding close during a hunt, he has seen their eyes, brimming with a sorrow he recognizes. When he shoots, each orb's light dims slowly, a fire winking out toward morn. A bleat draws his attention. The calf has risen. It totters on wobbly legs among the carcasses. He has shot it in the shoulder, missing its heart. He does not raise his rifle. The time for such sound has passed. He strides forward, flies clouding his face, and draws his bowie knife. The calf stands still. It considers him with human eyes. He kneels, collars the calf's neck with his arm, tilts its snout toward the sky. Its dense scent recalls his boyhood by the stove in Liverpool, his siblings in a heap, the flames dying for want of coal. A swift slice opens its throat. He pictures the child its skin will warm. The calf drops to its knees, keels onto its side. Breath huffs from its muzzle. The light fades from its pupils. He stands up. Masters and Burroughs have made short work. 4 creatures remain. He tackles them, hacking through the thick skin and tugging the hides from the bodies. He carves out hams and tongues, abandons the rest. Their wagon can carry only so much weight. He must take what will profit him. The reek of voided bowels envelops him. He tugs his bandana over his nose. In town, he will purchase new overalls and a shirt, possibly a pair of boots. His own are rotten with blood, their soles cracked from the long spring. The prairie takes time to thaw, the snowmelt to evaporate. It's hard to remember the icy winter now on this August day. Sweat stiffens his clothes. If the hides and hams and tongues fetch enough, he can do more than buy new clothes. He can visit a dance hall in Dodge City. Maybe she will be there, the one named Daisy, with hair red as his own, the base of her throat the single soft spot in town. Daisy has never laughed at his ear, a solid lump against his skull, liquefied like tallow, hardened to a scar. The skin around it shiny, with a bald patch where the hair won't grow. When he chooses, he can summon its precise scent, sizzling against the stovetop, the weight of his father's hand atop his skull. He might have understood if his father were drunk, but it was dawn, his eyes rimmed red from insomnia, not whiskey. His father shoveled the last coal into the stove and let its iron sides heat. Samson feigned sleep, watching through parted lids, but his father wasn't fooled. How quickly he grabbed him and pressed him down. "Tomorrow," his father said, "you'll go to work." For 2 years he worked the docks. The vast ships sliding from shore stirred a thirst no water could quench. At their journey's end, he imagined the land he'd begun seeing nightly in his dreams, an immense dry plain, a man walking across it. "I will be that man," he promised himself. At 15, he sold his father's sole treasure, a gold pocket watch filched from his own father's corpse back in Kerry, traded the £35 for a ticket, and boarded a steamship west. At Castle Garden in New York, he registered with his first name alone, relinquishing his father's with a simple negligence of the pen. Samson he kept for his mother's sake. She had insisted it meant power, particularly with his long hair. Nonetheless, he lasted a mere week before chopping the hair off. In this new world, he told himself, he would be a new man. With the previous week's labor, they've enough hides now, stretched and dried in the sun. Tonight they will sup on roasted jackrabbit and boiled beans. He will listen to the howl of wolves, and a prickle will pass from his arms to his heart. The sky, as always, will overwhelm him with stars. He will sleep to the sound of his fellows farting and snoring and grunting from bad dreams. In the morning, he will watch Burroughs and Masters scrape their chins raw in the early light and hope his 21st birthday will award him such bristles. Once the fresh hides dry, they will pack up camp for town, leaving broken stems where they slept, a blackened ring from their fire. By year's end, his pockets should be richly lined. As 1873 folds into 74, he will be able to make an offer, a ring for Daisy, a wagon to Texas, a farm of his own. Together, they might raise a son, a boy who could walk the furrows alongside him, casting seed into the rich brown soil of this country he has chosen, for himself and for all the generations to come. He has not planted seeds before, but he would like to do so. What a joy it must be to see that pioneering green stem poking its head from the earth. Moon. Mars, 2073.
Once I had a family. It was a family of three. Uncle One, Uncle Two, and me. The uncles called me Moon, and they loved me as their own. They fed me dust, sang me to sleep, took turns carrying me on their backs. When I entered my second year, they taught me to walk, and I learned the joy of putting one foot before the other.
"Keep your eyes on the horizon," Uncle Two instructed. "That's it."
We had no fixed home. Ever since I could remember, we had traveled. Once I could stand on my own two feet, I toddled beside the uncles, doing my best to keep up. We marched across red dunes, along mountain ridges, into valleys striated with stone. We examined pebbles, cliff faces, the shades of yellow in the sky. At first, I took our nomadic existence on faith. This is what we do. We walk. But when I entered my sixth year, I thought to ask why. We were crossing a vast plain, the uncles eager to discover its end. But at my question, they stopped. I saw us clearly then. The uncles, tall and thin and pale, their hearts pulsing purple through their translucent chests, and I beside them, smaller and darker, rough hair sprouting from my head, my own heart mercifully hidden. We were the only living things I had ever known. Around us, nothing but the plane's vastness and the big sky, which looked terribly empty.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?